I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Olson, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Let's talk some Utah Jazz basketball. Great Ben Anderson. You hear him every day from 10 to 12. You also read him on KSLSports.com. As the Jazz drop a tough one over the weekend to the Brooklyn Kyrie Irvings, as he has a huge night. And I'll tell you what, that was fun to watch. I know, look, Kyrie, flat earth guy, a little weird. But make no mistake, the guy can play the game of basketball. Ben joins us now. Hey, Ben, how you doing?
Hey, Ben.
Good. How are you guys?
I'm ready to get back into some Jazz action. Every time they take a couple of days, it feels like it's 2 weeks.
Well, you should cover them every night.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. They take 2 days, and it feels like I'm waiting for the Super Bowl to kick off or the national championship. But
you don't mind that weekend, though, I'm sure.
No, and you know what? We got Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday off next week, so you kind of start to recognize. And they played so many games so early. I think there's a real, not a burnout, but you kind of just could feel the mileage this year. It just came early as opposed to later in the season.
So you enjoy the game of basketball, and you appreciate great performances. Just how much fun was it to see Kyrie Irving put on a show like that?
Yeah, he's amazing. He really is. As you said, you know, he's a weird guy off the floor and problematic, but on the floor, he's as good as it gets. And there are a lot of NBA players who will tell you he's the best player in the league. And you know, maybe he doesn't impact winning the most, but if you're going to put the ball in a guy's hand and say, go make magic happen, go be unstoppable, he's up there with just about anybody, especially when he's shooting like he did the other night in the second half. When you can pull up for 35 feet, I know we can blame Walker Kessler for not closing out enough, but okay, so Walker Kessler closes down, he dribbles around him and hits a crazy layup. You know, you can't do anything about some guys like that, and that's how he played. So it is fun to see those performances, and the league is in such a spot where it's more often than not somebody has 40. Not just, you know, not just every night, but in a couple of games. I mean, there are great performances around the league seemingly every night. So it's in a good spot. It's been fun to watch.
When I see Kyrie do stuff like that, and I know that Kevin Durant's, another 3 or 4 weeks out. But I can't help but think, if this Brooklyn Nets team, I hate them, and then I love them, and then I hate them, but they got so much talent. But let's just say Kyrie Irving gets a little extra rest. Kevin Durant gets back from this injury. The rest of the team stays fairly healthy. Do you find them as a contender coming out of the East?
Yeah, I think they should be, because I look at their rotation. I think they have 8 guys that you can play in the playoffs. That includes, let's see if Patty Mills can play, but I believe in Seth Curry. He's played in huge games and comes from that bloodline and obviously has an ability to do that. I think Joe Harris can probably play. I guess their big man depth is a little bit of a question, and maybe that's something they need to try and address at the trade deadline if they have assets. I honestly don't know what they have at their ability. But maybe they can go out and get another veteran big man who could help them. But I think Nick Claxton is really good, and he's the type of center that can actually defend a lot of different spots in the playoffs. He was really good against the Jazz. I thought they felt every second of him when he was on the floor. And then I think Royce O'Neal is like a nice addition who can play some defense and play in the postseason a little bit. And they're really long and they're really athletic. And that's basically what you need to win in the playoffs. And then you've got 2 guys who, at their best, are purely unstoppable and shooting around them. So it's designed well. yeah, I'm glad it's worked out. I'm happy for Jacques Vaughn that he's coaching that team as well as he is, because I do think Steve Nash was a problem and was too inexperienced to have that job. So I don't have any problem with the Nets themselves, and I think they certainly have the talent to make a run at it. I wouldn't call them the favorite, but they're maybe a trade away from getting there.
So I think when the Jazz were able to unload Royce O'Neal for a first-round pick, everybody was like, oh my gosh, Danny Ainge just fleeced the Nets. But honestly, considering where that pick will probably land when it's all said and done and the value he's given to Brooklyn, I think that's actually not a bad trade. I think he's played really well and has been a good piece for them.
Yeah, we've talked about the Donovan Mitchell trade being a win-win. I don't think people are saying the Rudy Gobert trade's a win-win anymore. I don't think anyone thinks Minnesota won that deal. But we've said win-win as a kind of a common phrase this year for trades, and maybe this is another one. I think you're right. I don't think this was a bad trade, certainly for Brooklyn, especially because it's going to be the 28th pick. Now, the Jazz are happy to have a 28th pick. They've got a young guy, and they've got time they can develop. You know, Cam Thomas played a couple of minutes for the Nets the other night. He was a second-round draft pick at LSU who can really score the ball. But they don't have room to develop that guy and teach him how to play defense. So he was bad. He got beat a couple of times, didn't switch once. And you just got to pull him off the floor and say, well, you don't get to play anymore. You just, you know, and now you're eating up a roster spot. So that's not valuable for us. So that's where, yeah, you know, Royce O'Neal is a guy who can play those 16 most important games of the season in the postseason for you. I don't know if he plays 25 minutes or 30 minutes in those games. I worry about him a little bit shooting in the fourth quarter, and maybe you pull him off in place of Ben Simmons. And that's a huge question mark, because I don't know if you can have both Ben Simmons and Nick Claxton on the floor at the same time, because neither can shoot free throws, so they're just going to get hacked, and that's an issue, and that's a potential fatal flaw for the Nets. But you trust him more than you do a rookie who's still learning, you know, and that's the value of Royce O'Neal. And good for Royce, because he was such a long shot to make the NBA and never really put up great stats in college or in Europe, and has really turned into a nice role player on a top-tier Eastern Conference playoff team. So that's a huge accomplishment for him.
Ben, how close are we getting to being able to etch Lauri Markkanen's name into stone as a 2023 All-Star?
I think he's there, in all honesty. I don't really know what the push is for anyone else. I get that the Kings deserve to have somebody, and Sabonis probably can be that guy. And I think you can fit both of them in, whether you know you pick one as a wild card or one is just the front court reserve coming off the bench. And then just with the injuries that are around, with Anthony Davis, who I don't think is going to be able to qualify for the playoffs just because he's missed so many games. If he's back and healthy to play, I guess maybe he'll be out there, but I'm not super confident in that. I think he's there. I think he's made it. I think he's done everything you have to, not just statistically, but, you know, the big games when you need to have big games and impressive performances, and he does it every night. I think he's there. In fact, I think he's probably got a better shot of making it than Sabonis, and that's, you know, that's hard because the Kings are having their first good season in 20 years, but I would be really, really surprised if he doesn't end up making it, because he's having a terrific season, and I'm not sure what more you could ask of him.
Did you see the press conference? And I apologize for putting you on the spot. If you didn't, it's not a big deal. But you see the Damian Lillard press conference the other night, or I think it was last night, where
I saw some of the Patrick Beverley stuff.
And Damian just kind of said, look, you know, everybody keeps asking me about trades. Don't ask me about trades anymore. I'm not the guy. And I always think it's unfair because the GM doesn't have regular media appearances. And so, you know, a lot of those questions get directed towards the coach and the player. But Damian seems visibly frustrated with what's going on in Portland. They've lost three in a row, you think. And now, you know, it's just kind of another season for Portland, underachieving with high salaries. Do you think that there might be some moves available there?
Yeah, I'm curious how much talent they can add. I know they gave up a first-round pick to go out and get Jeremy Grant. You know, at some point, you just have to maybe wonder if Dame is not the right guy in that environment for where they are in their building process. At one point, they felt like they were kind of close, and I don't think they had the right pieces around them, and they made some mistakes with, you know, who they brought in or the guys they had. But you just need such a specific roster to win with a guy like Dame, and it's possible to build, but I think they found themselves at such an asset deficit to be able to build that type of team. And I do think that's probably what Danny Ainge and Justin Zanuck realized about this Jazz team, was that yes, Donovan Mitchell is good enough to win with, and you can see that in Cleveland. I don't know if the Jazz had the pieces to build the team around him that they were going to need to going forward, so they just pulled the trigger and avoided falling into this mediocre stretch that Portland has had now for, I mean, what, 5 years really in a row? They made that one run to the conference finals and got beat by the Warriors pretty soundly and have never gotten close to getting back to it. So I think sometimes pulling the trigger on that early, as opposed to getting to that guy who's now, I mean, Dame's owed like $40 million a year, and they don't really have a lot of valuable trade assets that are going to make a difference. You know, they traded C.J. McCollum, and it didn't do anything to make them better, and CJ's a really good player. So I do think they should trade Dame. If that was up to me, I would find a way to make that move, and, you know, who do you get? I don't know. You know, there's so many places you could move him, and so many teams would line up. But if you were to go to that front office and say, hey, look at what the Jazz got for Donovan Mitchell, do you wish you had that for Dame right now? They might say yes. I mean, they would love having Lowry Markkanen on a team that's, you know, honestly below the Jazz in the standings right now, and Lowry would have him in the exact same spot that Dame does. So I think that's where you have to measure yourself. I don't think they will do it this, you know, in the next couple of weeks. That would be a huge shift if they did. But if they don't, they should do it this offseason.
I heard you and Jake talking with Coach Lacombe earlier today, and great conversation, kind of back and forth. And I can't remember if it was you or Jake that asked, how much do you value the draft picks as assets that the Jazz have? And the first thing that came to my mind, Ben, was it all comes down to the person that's picking, or the guy that's actually dealing with those first round picks. Do you agree with that or disagree with that? And depending on that, how do you feel about the guy that is dealing with it right now?
I just don't think even the best drafters in the world bat 1,000. So the more cracks you have at it, the better. So in that sense, I wouldn't be loose with these draft picks. I wouldn't just throw them in and attach them to anything to move up. Like, you might be better off with an 8 and a 14 as opposed to a 5 in this draft. And that's as high as you could get. You know, I think maybe you do want to get those two players, especially with this roster that has such little shape to it still. You know Lowry's good. You think Walker has a high ceiling, but we don't know exactly what Walker Kessler can turn into. And Ochai's had some really nice moments over the last month, but it's a month of basketball. I mean, that's nothing in the long run. So I'm not sure I would make an aggressive move to get up into the top three unless I just was absolutely positive there was a can't-miss guy, and that's just so rare. Can't-miss guys really aren't a thing. You know, we don't even know if Scoot Henderson and Victor Wembanyama are going to be can't-miss guys. And we seem to think that's going to be the case every season, that there's a guy who's going to be a superstar, and so few of them actually exist in the NBA. So I would hold on to him. I like the idea of making picks. I do think you can have better drafters, and Danny Ainge, I think, certainly has a vision for the team, which is a positive, but this team is so far away from having a true identity. I don't know. I don't know if giving up on a lot of those pieces to move up is the smart move or is the right move quite at this point. I think maybe you use that move when you're further down the road, when you realize, okay, yes, Lowry is, you know, this type of player. He's the number two best player on a championship team. Because is he that good? I don't know. If you were to put him as the number two on a bunch of teams around the NBA that have a legit number one, is he good enough to push them over the edge? I'm not sure if that's the case. So then maybe he's not a number two. Maybe he's a number three. Or maybe he's a number one and he just hasn't reached that ceiling yet. Those are all questions I think you still have to weigh before you start making team-shaping trades that give up true value with those draft picks in the future. So I would be cautious about that still at this point, unless there was a guy you just absolutely fell in love with and you thought, hey, this is going to push you so much farther forward in your championship window and keep it open for a longer time than just owning those draft picks is. So I know that might have sounded like a lot of word salad, but it's tricky. It's why I wouldn't move too fast, because I think a lot of teams make mistakes by moving too quickly.
If you're Danny Ainge and trade deadline looms and you're getting offers for, you know, Mike Conley or whoever on this team, what do you want? What are you looking for? Are you looking for young talent? Are you looking for expiring contracts? Are you looking for draft picks? What do you think the Jazz are hoping to get in return right now?
Yeah, honestly, I think sometimes it's just about keeping assets alive. And I think that's one thing that Danny Ainge does really well is he says, okay, there is value in this player. Maybe I don't exactly, you know, cash in those chips, but I want to keep that value alive. And if Jordan Clarkson leaves for nothing, you've lost that value. There's no real value there for the Jazz, because I actually don't think cap space matters all that much for this team going forward. Because, you know, you're not going to go sign a max player this offseason. You don't care about that. It's not what you're trying to do. So if you have to hold on to a guy for another season, and that's Mike Conley, fine. You know, you hold on to him for another year, and he opts in, you owe him $24 million, and that's fine. Whatever. Maybe you trade him again next season for a team that says, yeah, we want a veteran point guard that can execute. But if you can get something back like the Rui Hachimura trade today and you get a couple of second-round picks and you say, well, we've seen how the Jazz have used those in the past. They've attached them to move off of bad contracts, or they've attached them to move up in the second round. Okay, there's some value there. And I think that's how you look at it. And that's why, you know, you look at Jordan Clarkson, you look at some other deals around and you say, well, maybe you don't have Jordan Clarkson, but that's an asset that you want to just keep that value around for a little bit longer. And honestly, having it for the next 30 games is kind of short-sighted just because you like him, just because he's a likable guy in the community. because if he leaves, you don't get anything for him, and then you run into the Paul Millsap issue and the, you know, Gordon Hayward issue again, who's coming back into town tonight. All of those are problems, and that's lost money. That there's no reason to lose money in the NBA. You can find value for guys as long as you're not taking bad deals back or things that set you backwards for the next couple of seasons. And I think Danny Ainge has been really good at that in his career. And I think he identifies it in places where maybe not every GM or VP of basketball ops looks around the NBA. So I would definitely consider moves like that to keep as much value in your bank account as you can. And that's why I do think there's going to be moves for the Jazz. Like, there's reason to make moves. And there's not really a lot of reason to commit to one thing or another at this point. Your value is your flexibility that they have right now on top of having a couple of good young pieces and a bunch of draft picks. And I bet they lean more into having even more flexibility.
You like the Achi Murray trade? I've always kind of liked him as a player.
Yeah, I like him. I was honestly kind of wondering, you know, is he a Lauri Markkanen type that's just been in the wrong spot, that was asked to be a star too early in his career, and that's just not who he was ready to be? And once he turns 24, 25, because I think he's only 24 years old, you know, once he becomes, you know, a little bit more of a guy in his mid-20s and kind of matures into an adult and gets some of that old man strength a little bit that I think Lauri has that he's never had before, you just become such a better player. You know, I don't think he's going to flourish next to LeBron necessarily, because I think it's hard to play next to LeBron, but he can be more valuable than what the Nets or than what the Wizards got for him.
So the trade deadline just around the corner, February 9th, and it's just going to be a huge storyline. One of the biggest trade deadlines, or maybe that trade area, is going to be one of the more interesting to watch the Utah Jazz navigate it, because it feels like, Ben, the Utah Jazz are three straight losses away from going from the 9 spot down to the 13 spot and being out of even the play-in. So there's just a lot of flexibility on where this Jazz team could go and what could happen here to finish out the season. In your opinion, what is the worst case finish to the season for the Utah Jazz?
Yeah, I guess probably the 11th seed with all of these players still intact. And that's honestly not like a horrible situation. It's not like it sets them back a decade, but, you know, you just barely miss out on the playoff or the play-in tournament, which I guess if you wanted to go to the play-in tournament and say, hey, Lowry, let's see if you can, you know, kind of develop that experience or give Walker that experience a little bit just to know what that tastes like. There's something there, but then it gives you the worst draft pick. You're barely outside of the lottery. Or barely in the lottery, I guess, if you're the 10th seed, you'd be like the 12th or the 13th. There's not a ton of value there. I think Minnesota's going to have that same pick, so you're back to the, you know, the draft where the Jazz got Chris Humphreys and Kirk Snyder. They had the 13th and 15th pick or something.
I remember that draft.
Like, that's not a ton of value. And maybe you can move up to 10 or 11, but again, is it better to have a 10th pick than it is to have a 13 and 15? Probably not. Probably not in this type of draft. So that's what I would... That's what I'd say is probably not the perfect situation. I think at some point, if you could get a legit top 10 pick, you get, let's say, climb up to 9, and then you do have the Minnesota pick that's at 12 or 13, and then you have the 29th pick or 28th pick, whatever the Nets pick ends up conveying into, that gives you a little bit more flexibility. You've got picks in kind of each 10 quadrant, the top 10, 10 to or 11 to 20, and then 21 to 30. I think that's a pretty nice spot to be in, because that generally coincides with some of the tiers in the draft and where you can find good players you like. And if you have to package things of this draft to move up one or two of those picks, I think there's some value there as well. But, yeah, I don't think having two middling picks at 13 and 15 is all that valuable, because then you're a little bit beholden to what the other teams value in the draft. You know, like which guy they think they like. You're just, well, you've got 13 and 15. You're probably not all that separated in how much you like those guys. And it just matters what the team ahead of you or between you does. And that doesn't necessarily help you a ton.
Ben Anderson, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben, always a pleasure. Thanks for hopping on with us. And look forward to reading your recap of tonight's game up on KSLSports.com.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
There you go. Ben Anderson, one of the best out there, if not the best, when it comes to breaking down Jazz basketball.
Yeah. If you want just Jazz basketball, Ben's a really good follow. He's a really good follow. And his stuff is really good.
He's the best, man. He really is. Well, I'm just here for the hoops, man.
He just does a good job of basketball, and it's good. Because I like it. You know, I like basketball. Not like guys that do it for the basketball. And the other thing is Ben's never the story. It's always the basketball's the story. That's good.
Just make it about Ben.
Yeah. I like that.
Or just make it all about basketball.
Yeah, but we could all use more Ben.
No.
Yeah. That's a fact.
If there's anything that we need more of, it's more Ben Anderson in our life.
That's for sure. He's really good at what he does, and appreciate him taking some time to
guy
hang
just
out
did
with
a 2-hour radio show. He doesn't need to hop on with us, but he says, okay, let's go.
I really do agree with that. I think anything finishing in that 11, really, I feel like anything finishing 9, 10, 11, the play-in doesn't interest me, but you will get some guys some experience, and we get to see a little bit of postseason Lauri Markkanen maybe, and maybe a little bit of postseason Walker Kessler. They get a taste of it for when the Utah Jazz do pull the trigger, try to make a legitimate move to make them a contender. This team is exciting, interesting, far from a contender. We'll see if they can get themselves there with some moves, and or we'll see if they get themselves completely out of that, removed from this middle area that they're sitting at. But like I said, you're a game and a half out of being in the 13 spot.
Yeah. I've forgotten about that Kirk Snyder, Chris Humphreys draft where they were like number 13 and number 15, and the Jazz snagged both of them, and it just didn't really go anywhere. And then I remember Kirk Snyder and wondering if he's still in prison. I don't think he is.
Was that Kevin? What?
Was arrested on March 30th, 2009, broke into a home, assaulted a man, was charged with aggravated burglary, pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Hearing was held on a $500,000 bail. Subsequently convicted, sentenced to 3 years in jail and fined $5,500. Was released early. Then signed with a team up in Canada. And that's where the old...
After his imprisonment.
That's where the old Wikipedia page dries up.
See, I thought there was more to that story.
I did, too.
I thought he robbed a guy and he was actually in his birthday suit, is what I thought.
I think there might be some truth to that.
Was it right?
Yeah.
Didn't you remember hearing that?
Yeah.
There was some lewdness that was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he needed
a bad
some,
run.
He needed some help.
Yeah.
Yep.
Immediately.
In a bad place.
All right. Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Nate Orchard, Jake joins us from Advanced Windows here in studio. All right, so Jake, let's start with you. What are some telltale signs? Because I think Nate mentioned, or no, I think you mentioned as well, you walk by your windows and you see that condensation in between the panes and stuff like that. What are some signs that you're like, okay, now it's time to get these things swapped out?
So visual signs, it's that condensation. That's a big one. And if you're looking at your windows, big visual sign that you need new windows is if you have an older home with the original aluminum windows, there's a very high chance that you need new windows. It's looking at the actual frame of that window. And if there's ever, you can see sometimes there's gaps between the sash and the frame that it becomes very apparent you need new windows. The feel, if you stand next to your windows and they are, it's like you can feel that draft, like a little breeze flowing through there, that is a sign that you need new windows. The other is just with the looking at like the borders of your windows, just around like the just the outside of that frame.
Yeah, and over time the caulk will fail, right? Windows been sitting in your home for a long time. Different the climate allows that to the caulk to fail over time. But the biggest thing that we've seen again is just the draft that's coming through those windows, through those cracks, and especially with the single pane glass and things like that, you could really feel a difference.
How invasive is the actual replacement aspect of it? So if somebody buys their windows and they're thinking, oh man, do they have to take out the siding? Do they have to rip off drywall inside? How invasive is the actual replacement?
So our installers are all master installation certified.
They've seen it all. And
they've
I know
seen
they've
it
been
all.
With
they've
you
been,
for years and years.
Yeah, we got one guy who's been with us for 15 years. Other guy has been with us about 12. So our crews have been around a long time. They have a lot of experience. But they do a great job of taking those windows out in the most non-invasive way possible. And from start to finish, I mean, these guys are good at what they do. Talk about being a professional, right, in your craft. Me being football, these guys, windows is what they do day in and day out. They've seen it all. And so, you know, from start to finish, they do it again in the most non-invasive way. And they put that new window in and make it look pretty for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and the other thing, too, is the fact that it's all local from the –
guy coming to your house and, mm-hmm. and selling and measuring to the installation, the manufacturing, and the support afterwards. It's a one-stop shop.
That's exactly right. It's every one of our employees, they are all local. Everything that comes in, people who manufacture the windows in the shop, they are all local. And like what you said with the one-stop shop, so we have our sales guys come to your house. They will look at your home and tell you what you need for your home, the best product available, and what is the what would best fit your home. All the windows are custom. So they measure them, mm-hmm. and then we take those measurements and we build the window to those measurements. That custom measurement, the shape, doesn't matter what the shape is. Yep. We build the window for that, and then we come install it. Our team, everyone, again, local. And then we warranty it. So for life, if you have issues with anything, you can call us. You're not having to call someone in the Midwest trying to figure out, chase down your warranty and who's supposed to service this and what's covered. It's very one-stop, crystal clear what you need to do.
I love that. I wish that we had more time in these spots because we could talk about the doggy doors. We could talk about the windows that fold in so you can clean out, the windows mm-hmm. that pull yep. out that you can clean. The different screens, all the little bells and whistles that mm-hmm, yeah. make Advanced so unique, outside of the fact that you guys build your stuff right here in the great state of Utah. But all the little bells and whistles, I want people to get into the showroom. If you're thinking about replacing windows, go see how they can throw in different panes and square out the panes and all the different window processes, how you can access a window that maybe you haven't been able to access and clean. And you want mm-hmm. a window that you can clean. You've got windows that like fold in so you mm-hmm. can clean them. I went through that whole yeah. process. Yeah. And you've got options for everybody out there.
Oh, yeah. Lots of options. Single hung, mm-hmm. double hung, casement windows, single slider, double vents. We got it all.
Look at you go.
Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. This is what I do. Talk about like a fire zone blitz. Come on, man. I know where they're coming from.
It's like breaking down an offense.
You know what I'm saying?
Film room, man. That was awesome.
And then we also have the grids. We can put the grids in the glass, right? Any design you guys are thinking, our salesmen will run you through the whole process.
801-850-9100. Call right now. And if you call and get on the books right now, you'll get $3,000 off 10 windows or more. But make that phone call. Set up your appointment. 801-850-9100. $3,000 off 10 windows or more right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Sean O'Connell, OC, SiriusXM, Pac-12 Today. What has been the biggest turnaround for the Pac-12 that we suddenly have five or six teams that are contenders?
Well, it's the transfer portal. As much as people like to complain about it and deride the way that kids don't want to stick around in one place and develop, if you're a fan of Pac-12 football, you should love the transfer portal, because in one off-season cycle, we didn't know if USC was going to be back. That experiment worked. Lincoln Riley got that thing turned around very rapidly. Kalen DeBoer did an incredible job. The transfer portal has benefited the Pac-12 conference more than it has benefited any other Power 5 conference.
It's Unrivaled. Afternoons from 3 to 6. Presented by G2G Bars. Perfect for anyone who needs a quick, tasty, and nutritious boost. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Our buddy OC just retweeted this, and I cannot believe this. Like, I know Kyle Whittingham is tight with a dollar. I cannot I cannot believe this. There is a man by the name of Greg Dart. I'm assuming that's his name. That's his Twitter handle. Who tweeted out a picture of him sitting on a plane hanging out with Kyle Whittingham and his wife. Coming back from, I believe, Kansas City.
Yeah, so, Kyle's son's on that staff.
There's a couple things that surprised me on this one. Kyle is making a sizable amount of money here.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle is also tight with a lot of boosters. If Kyle wanted to call a booster up and say, hey, I need your plane. I'm going to Kansas City. Somebody would give it to him like that. But also the fact that, okay, fine, you fly commercial. That's cool. Kyle is not in first. Kyle is in Comfort Plus.
He's a wise man making good decisions with his money.
Kyle, you can spring for the first, man. You can spring for the first, dude. It's actually not as bad as, you know, sometimes it is, but, you know, you get out in advance a little bit. You can get the first for pretty cheap.
I was going to say, how often does first class fill out? Is it going to be the first class that filled out?
I don't know.
No open seats?
But Kyle Whittingham flying
that
Comfort
doesn't
Plus.
Sound, it just doesn't look or seem right to me. I can't imagine he did it to save money. I can't. I just...
You think that's all that was available?
No, I can definitely see Kyle being like, I'm not paying $300 extra dollars a ticket.
He loves to save money. But I can't imagine that he's going to allow a few extra $100 to keep him out of that luxury seating. So that some fan isn't like, hey, can I take a picture with you, coach?
And by the way, Kyle looked very, very... he did not look annoyed at all by taking a selfie here.
But that's Kyle. People need to understand, Kyle is one of the coolest dudes.
Bar none.
He's hard-edged. And he's a competitive sucker. And Lloyd was there in a moment where his competitiveness, I thought, nearly...
Ended your guys' friendship?
Yeah, and injured him. It was bad.
I was like, oh, man, I really wish I wasn't here for this. This got really awkward.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, I thought his arm broke. But anyways.
What did you do? No, you didn't.
Oh, yeah. You know.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
who initiated this?
Something popped.
Who initiated this?
I don't remember, Lloyd.
I don't recall. I don't even want to recall, to be honest with you. I just want to let it be.
But this has been like five years. What's 4 or 5 years ago now?
Yeah, it's been a little bit.
You let him win, right?
No. Well, I'll tell you, it didn't end. It didn't finish.
Jeez. You can go ahead. You might as well just make the noise.
No.
So.
Anyway.
So anyways.
There's our good.
He is just the best. And he's very approachable. Even though he's hard, he feels like he's a hard-edged dude.
I would be, if I were a fan, you know, we've gotten to know Kyle. In fact, Kyle was, you know, I certainly don't have the relationship you have with him, but at Media Day, I walked by and he's like, Gerard, what's up? You know, just like, you know, scares you a little bit, like you're ready to do some up and downs, and he comes over and gives you like a,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm doing push-ups, coach. No, you're not. What are you doing? Push-ups, coach. Up-downs, coach.
I'm sorry.
Jump jacks. It's like, I'm doing something. I'm very busy.
It's water, I promise.
As soon as you see him, you want to start hustling.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to hustle over to the buffet line, coach. I'm going to hustle over and get a sandwich. Then I'm going to hustle and eat it. Then I'll hustle back to the radio station.
But, I mean, he just says your name, and you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, he's so fun, man.
All right, there's your good. Kyle Whittingham sitting Comfort Plus, hanging out with the common folk. On a flight to Kansas City. Very cool.
Good for him.
There's their good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
I wanted to throw up on my lap when I saw this whole thing go down. I don't know if I've ever seen something so pathetic.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Bad.
Absurd. Do you realize if this was any other fan, it could be a lifetime ban.
Oh, yeah. Oh, easy lifetime ban and maybe pressing charges.
Yes. Shannon Sharp somehow got into a big-time verbal altercation with Ja Morant's dad, T. And I think this state is pretty familiar with T. Morant.
Yeah.
Because Ja Morant was in town, and there were some accusations on how his family was treated, and it was a bad situation. Really bad situation. So I think people are very familiar with Ja Morant's dad's dad, T. Well, this all started with Dylan Brooks and Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp's sitting courtside. And he's jawing back and forth with Dylan Brooks. And he said, Dylan, you're too small to guard LeBron James. So he decides he wants to engage. And Dylan Brooks then says, beep you. And Sharp says, beep you back. And Sharp saying, you don't want any of this. And then in steps Steven Adams. Steven Adams, once he moves towards something, the whole world sees it.
Yeah.
He's so big and so just aggressive and menacing.
Yes.
So he moves over towards Shannon Sharp. I don't think Shannon Sharp wanted any of him. But
no, no.
But because I'm a big guy, and when I get around these NBA athletes, some of them are extremely scrawny and skinny. Like Rudy Gobert never made me nervous, but there are some guys that are just built and they're big, and that's Steven Adams. So then there's this scuffle back and forth. Somehow they start moving Shannon Sharp to the side, and that's when he got into the back and forth with T. Morant, John Morant's dad.
Yeah.
And then he's yelling at T. Morant, no, you won't. No, you wouldn't. And somehow this thing escalates into this ugliness. He's taken into the hallway. Somebody points a finger in his face, and he's sitting back on the sideline by the start of the second half.
Yeah.
The whole thing is stupid. I don't know. Was it planned? I don't even know if it's a WWE thing or if Shannon Sharp's trying to drive ratings. We are talking way too much about Shannon Sharp.
Yeah, lately. He's been in the news a lot.
Way too much.
Like, what happened?
Well, and then he goes on his program today and gives this 3-minute just blabbering apology on how he was wrong and apologizes to everybody out there. And that's probably the best ratings that trash show has ever gotten in forever, because they're like, ooh, what's Shannon going to say? We got to listen to what Shannon's going to say.
I saw a tweet. There's stupid little things. Tweets sometimes will just catch me the right way at the right time. And this guy said, oil change waiting rooms across the country.
I saw that. Yeah.
Are aghast at what Shannon Sharp just said. Because that's the only time you ever see that show.
Yeah.
I can't imagine people tune in. And it's not about Shannon Sharp. It's about that
Skip
clown that he's with.
Yeah.
More than it is.
Well,
Shannon.
Remember the tune in was, remember when Skip tweeted something about DeMar Hamlin, and Skip and him went at it a little bit. And he took the show off. And of course, the ratings are going to be huge that night when he finally shows up, because they're wondering, okay, what's going to happen between these two? Because Shannon left for a show.
And honestly,
These are rating getters. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe this is something we need to be doing more. Maybe we need to be picking fights more on courtside. Maybe we need to be.
I put myself in his shoes. If I was courtside at a Jazz game and I somehow egged Kyrie Irving into a back and forth, which at that point, one of his teammates comes flying, Royce O'Neal comes flying across the court and gets in my face, I'm fired.
Yeah.
I'm fired.
You're in. I don't even know.
If I'm not fired, I go into hiding because I feel like an idiot.
I don't know if Tanya Vey actually has you come into the office. I think she probably handles it over the phone. She may even just send you a text.
And it'd probably be that evening.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You did what? No, I told Kyrie Irving that he's not big enough to defend against Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah.
You did. And that's, yeah, and then Kyrie Irving's dad was there, and then Kyrie Irving's dad decided he wanted to say, I'll beat you up. And I said, no, you wouldn't.
And I got out of my seat, and I got onto the court. Refs had to take me off.
I can't believe this happened. This has to be WWE crap.
And imagine if you were courtside, you being Hans Olsen, and then Jim Olsen, Chris Barney. They chat with you in the tunnel and say, hey, man, don't do that again, but you can go back to your seat now. You think that happens?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Unless
the fact that he's been in the news,
pre-planned.
The fact that he's been in the news this much just tells me there's something going on.
This is a little
shady. Some ratings. Yeah. they're doing something.
So what do we get? We got to come up with something, apparently,
This thing doesn't feel right to me.
It feels a little weird, yeah. And you know LeBron's in the middle of this, too. Because LeBron afterwards, like, you know, Shannon's my ride or die. He's my guy. I'll always support him.
LeBron's always looking to hitch his wagons onto something.
Did you say LeBron?
Yeah.
All right. Hands and Scotty. Real quickly, let's get to the ugly. We got to work this in.
And of course, the ugly.
So another missed extra point by the Dallas kicker. Score was 3-0. Dalton Schultz gets the touchdown reception. Everybody gets waiting with bated breath. And sure enough, Brett Maier, kick is blocked. And they were like, well, wait a minute. It's blocked. It's not his fault. I don't know. If you look at that trajectory.
It's flat.
It was flat, and it was going to the left.
This was not blocked from an outside speed. It was blocked by an interior hand that was one single hand stuck up, and it went right into the hand. But what's crazy is, how about a governor, the governor of Texas, getting involved in this? So Governor Abbott sent out a tweet, and he said, I swear I could kick as good as the Dallas Cowboys kicker. But what I didn't know, did you know Abbott is paralyzed from the waist down?
Apparently,
I had no idea.
1984, too, was paralyzed when an oak tree fell on him while jogging. I didn't know about this either.
No.
I had no idea. Now, I know Governor Abbott is always in the news, and I know some love him and some hate him, and this isn't the show for us to debate that, but what we do know is Governor Abbott is paralyzed in a wheelchair, and he sent out a tweet that said, I swear I can kick as good as the Dallas Cowboys kicker.
Yeah, you don't come back from that if you're mayor.
Oh! No!
That's the ultimate slap to the face.
Your governor just tweeted that.
Yeah, it's not okay.
He did go on and knock through a couple of field goals that...
Yeah, like a 48-yarder, too.
That ended up not mattering, but I do wonder...
Again, those weren't extra points. Those, for some reason, aren't a problem for him. It's the extra points are his bugaboo.
Five not missed block and throw it to home. We couldn't throw it to first base.
Right.
Five missed extra points in two games. Holy cow. They were able to overcome it once because they were just able to dominate in a wild card, but...
I so badly wanted it to come down to it.
Oh, I did too.
Like him to tie it or lose it. Like I just wanted it to happen.
When it was like, 19-12 or something like that. And I'm like, go down, score the touchdown, and then line up for that extra point.
Give me some drama. Let me see this.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's go.
That would have been – Shannon Sharp would have had to sit down and shut up because this would have taken front stage.
Hands and Scotty, what you may have – or excuse me, Whole World News next right here on The Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
Joining us now is new BYU defensive coordinator Jay Hill. You're going into a conference of the Big 12. What do you think this defense needs to be able to compete at the level that you guys are going to need to compete at?
We're always, as coaches, looking to improve the roster, the talent, the physicality, the size. And it's no different here. We got to upgrade the speed. We got to continue to bring size into the roster. And that's to be expected, right, going into the Big 12 and all the offenses we're going to be facing. We just got to elevate everything we're doing, and that's coaching too. We got to do a great job with schemes and techniques, tactics, everything we're doing. We just got to elevate our game a little bit.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10, presented by Murdoch Chevrolet, proudly serving Utah since 1926 on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. The hard-hitting news you care about.
Well, not really. But hey, at least we found it interesting.
This is Whole World News on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You got the whole world.
Hands and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Let's keep the flow going here. Hands, what do we got for Whole World News?
Well, I'm excited about this, Scotty. You know how much I love. And
yes.
Buzz Aldrin has found it now for the fourth time.
Attaboy, Buzz.
Oh, I'm sure it is love then.
He's what, 92, 93?
93 years old. Just had his 93rd birthday. So for those of you that don't know who Buzz Aldrin is, open up a newspaper. probably one of the biggest names in the history of our country when it comes to being an astronaut.
He's old enough you'd probably have to open a newspaper.
Is he the most Yeah, you would have to open up a newspaper. Is he the most famous astronaut of all time?
Or would that'd probably Neil would be the, you know, one small step. Neil Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
But Neil's not with us anymore, right?
Yeah, but Neil is the third best Armstrong because you got Lance and Louis.
Whoa!
What?
You stop right there.
Come on.
Don't.
Lance cheated.
Yeah, you're not going to put Lance in front of Neil.
But he's still quite the athlete.
You really going to put Lance ahead of Neil?
Yeah, I'm doing Lance and Louis.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Louis, I'll hear.
But Buzz Aldrin was a rap artist, remember?
Yes, I do.
For a while, he was cutting tracks.
I think he cut one track, and it was kind of a joke.
I don't think it was a joke. I think it was serious. But he's found happiness and love now for the fourth time. This is his fourth marriage in 93 years of living. I actually had to go look up his first marriage.
Probably what, in the 40s?
1954.
That's close.
And what's crazy is, he was married for 20 years, but divorced in 1974.
Yeah. Well, he got famous. It's like, yep. All right. Moving on.
Or maybe his wife, Joan Archer, just couldn't deal with how much jeopardy he puts in his way.
Oh, I'm sure that's what it was, yeah.
She couldn't deal with the length of time that he was gone on his spaceship trips. You and your dumb little spaceship.
So when are you going to be home? Yeah. I don't know, October?
When does your little spaceship thing come back?
You stop and grab some milk? Powdered?
It's not a spaceship, honey. It's a space shuttle. Whatever. Where are you going? To the moon. Oh, I'll bet.
Oh, I'm sure. That's the reason you're going to Florida, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man, I just love it. I'm so happy for him. So,
but, okay, wait a minute.
I'm so happy for him.
Yeah, all right, so.
Have you seen this girl?
No, I've not.
She's very pretty.
Please tell me she's not like in her 30s.
Can you not say girl?
Huh? Girl?
Please tell me she's not like in her 30s.
She's in her 60s.
Oh, okay. All right.
She's 63. She's 30 years younger. Almost exactly 30 years younger.
Well, half plus seven, he's well above that.
Half plus seven. And she's still getting the senior citizen discount. So he didn't jump down too young.
Yeah.
But she is very beautiful for 63, and they're very happy.
Yeah, right.
What? They're very happy.
He's barely alive.
And by the way, does he have any really,
he's not barely alive.
He is. No, at 93, you're barely alive.
Hold on. Go look at the pictures. Buzz is out there having the time of his life.
Yeah, I saw the picture. He doesn't even look like he knows what's happening.
Yeah, she's spoon-feeding him applesauce. Like, there's not a lot going on upstairs there. And after,
he doesn't even realize he's taking a photo.
You guys have to take apart everything that's beautiful, don't you?
There's nothing. This is a financial transaction. That's all this is.
This is a fine 93-year-old man that was lonely and looking for love. He happened to find an attractive 63-year-old blonde that was tired of eating at Chuck-A-Rama alone.
She wanted to go to Ruth Chris.
She was ready for a little bit. She was ready for somebody to take her to the moon.
Oh,
and
boy.
Buzz stepped in
to the moon
at the right time.
You've been waiting to lay that line.
How can you not be happy about this? This is the greatest thing.
This is not the greatest thing.
One of our country's biggest heroes.
Hey, look, he's earned everything that is coming his way, so good for him. If he wants to marry some 62-year-old at 93 years old, good for him, I guess. That wealth has been split in half now four times. I don't know how much is left on those residuals. I don't know how much money's coming in on that old bank account.
It's probably slimming down a little bit. This is the verbiage that he put with his post, because he's 93, but he's still using
posting. It's not him.
Social media. It is too.
No, it's probably her.
Some PR person.
We just played his rap. He just rapped like 5 or 6 years ago, wasn't it?
No, that was a really long time ago. That was probably the first show you and I worked on together when we did his rap. That's how long ago that was.
So, it was about 14 years ago?
Probably about 14, 15 years ago.
So, early 80s?
And that might even been old 70s? Then.
You know that wife's grabbing that phone and like putting it in front of his face so they have the facial recognition, or like grabbing his cold thumb and putting it on there so it'll open
Scotty,
up.
Cold thumb. Stop it. This is
the typing up whatever.
This is a two-way street. These people are in love.
She's in love with his bank account. That's what's going on.
I'm hoping when I'm 93, I'm that exuberant.
Yeah.
Full of life. I'm sure they're happy together. Oh, this is what he wrote. On my 93rd birthday and the day I will also be honored by living legends of aviation, I am pleased to announce that my longtime love, Dr. Fanca Fowler, and I have tied the knot. We were joined in holy matrimony in a small private ceremony in Los Angeles and are as excited as eloping teenagers.
Eloping teenagers.
He said eloping teenagers.
We shared a Werther's original together.
You're such a... We bought a whole bag of uncracked nuts that will be stored on...
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. Any other really old people jokes that you want to throw out there? Are we ready to get out?
I think we're probably good. All right. Jake and Nate's hanging out with us from Advanced Windows.
This is the stuff we get in trouble with. Not we. Scotty.
Whoa.
You should be talked about.
I think Lloyd piled on way more than I did.
Hey, I do want to just throw this out. If you're sitting in a 93-year-old house, chances are you need new windows. Those windows have run the course. They're probably a single pane, and you can get more efficient windows. What is the typical age on a house that needs their windows replaced?
It ranges. It really ranges from the quality of windows that were originally put in the house. Like this last week, I know we had a few homes that were like 2008 is when they were built.
Yeah.
Windows that were put in were builder grade, lowest, cheapest windows they could put in that looked fine when they were originally installed. And 12, 15 years later, those windows start to deteriorate and they quickly, like we love when those get put in homes because we know that that is in the next 15 years, those are going to need to be replaced. Some homes, it's anywhere like 90s, some of the 80s. We do homes that are like from like 1960 where they've had some original like wood windows that were at the time were state of the art.
You guys have probably seen some things like, whoa, how is this even still around? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There are windows that you see pictures of and it's like, wait, how is that person living in the house with that window and there's that gap in that? It's just a... There are, yes, all ranges of windows, but we're seeing some where it's 12 to 15 years where sometimes those windows need to be replaced, especially in like developments where you have builders that are building 20 homes and the windows in those, they are going for the cheapest window they can put in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just to
churn and burn.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Let's talk about if you know, there's a real opportunity and the government itself wants you to put in these high efficient windows as well. There's rebates and you guys can help people through that process.
Oh yeah. The rebates that are available that are out there that we've been able to work with Dominion Energy and Rocky Mountain Power to put together some amazing rebates for our customers. And it's what we get when someone was to buy our high performance energy efficient windows. Those are foam filled insulated vinyl with the I-89 low E glass from Cardinal. They qualify for these rebates, the highest rebates from both Dominion and Rocky Mountain. And that's a total of $5.50 per square foot of glass. Mm. So on average, a 10 window home is looking at an $800 rebate. Wow. That they're able to get. And that we provide all of the paperwork. We actually have worked closely with Dominion and Rocky Mountain to make sure that everything is set up for our customers and that it's an easy, smooth process for them to get those rebates.
And then you get this incredible product, this incredible window that's going to save you money on the other end.
Yeah, so you get this extremely nice window, a high-performance insulated window, and you're making money back from that. You have the government paying you.
I know there's a lot of people out there that are thinking, okay, I know I need to get this done, but I'm not right there in a financial situation to make it happen right now. Well, there's a couple things we're doing for you right now. You swap out 10 windows or more. You and Nate have been kind enough, Nate in particular, to, I don't know which one of you guys signed up on.
Nate.
To knock up $3,000 off. Now, you go to the website, advancedwindows.com, and you'll see $2,000, but because you like our listeners, you're going to give our listeners $3,000 off.
That is right.
And then the financing options are incredible as well. I mean, you know, same as cash for a good chunk of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, we could fit any budget. Whatever your situation is, we're more than happy to work with you and get something figured out to where, you know, we can get these windows in your home.
And the payments as low as, like, you're looking at around $100, approximately $100 a month if you were to go with a 10-year with 6.99% interest. Mm. If you want to go 6 year or 5 year with zero interest, you're looking to have it a little shorter. You don't want to pay any interest on it. You're looking at approximately $150
per month. So you're giving people 5 years, no interest, to knock that off. That's amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's plus rebates, and we're trying to do everything that we can to help people in our community just be more comfortable in their homes and help them live a happier lifestyle.
Yeah, and just educate them on our product and how it can benefit them.
And you're getting $3,000 off, but you got to call. Get this taken care of.
801-850-9100. That's 801-850-9100. It's all right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.